Talk Radio. This is going to be another one of my How I Did It podcasts, or if you rather, How I Done It, where my goal is to pass along the things I learn as a common Linux user, administering my home computers and network, and engaging in the types of software tinkering that appeals to our sort of enthusiast. I've been thinking for a while about replacing the small computer on my dinner table. I've been using an old HP TC1000, one of the original Active Stylus Windows tablets, now running Linux, of course, with the snap-in keyboard in a form factor similar to a netbook, with the advantage that all the vulnerable components were behind the LCD, up off the table and away from spills. It served my purpose of staying connected to IRC during meal times and occasional streaming of live casts, but I wanted more. I wanted to be able to join in the mumble while preparing meals. I wanted to be able to load any website I wanted without lockups, and I wanted to stream video content and watch DVDs. I was concerned, however, about putting a laptop on the table that would be an invitation to having any spilled beverage sucked right into the air intakes. I never even considered a desktop system in the dining room until I saw a refurbished Dell Inspiron 745 on GearXS.com. I wouldn't normally plug a specific vendor, but now GearXS is putting Ubuntu on all its used corporate cast-off systems. This Dell had the form factor that is ubiquitous in point of sale, a vertical skeleton frame with a micro system case on one side and a 17-inch LCD on the other, placing all the electronics several inches above any surface on which it is placed. I even found a turntable intended for small TVs that lets me smoothly rotate the monitor to either my place on the table or back towards the kitchen when I am cooking. I already had a sealed membrane keyboard with an integrated pointer and a wireless in USB dongle to complete the package. Shipped my new dual-core 2.8 GHz Pentium D system with 80 GB hard drive and Intel Drift graphics was under $150. The turntable was another $20 and upgrade from 1 GB to 4 GB of used DDR2 was another $30, but both turned out to be worth it. Since the box shipped with Ubuntu, I thought installing the distro of my choice would be of no consequence, and this is where my tale begins. I'm going to start my story towards the end, as that is the most important part. After installing four Linux distros in as many days, counting the original Ubuntu 10.04 LTX the box shipped with, a partial installation of Solus OS 2 Revision 5, and Fubuntu, and finally Lubuntu 10.12.04, I discovered I couldn't boot due to Grub corruption. The machine would post, but where I should have seen messages from Grub, I got a blank screen with a cursor in the upper left-hand corner. First, I thought I would do a total disk wipe and restart over, but using DBAN from the Ultimate Boot CD for Windows said it wasn't able to write to the drive. I'd never seen that before. So I started downloading the latest Rescatex. Meanwhile, I found an article told me that I could repair Grub with an Ubuntu CD, links in the show notes, so I tried booting from the Ubuntu 12.04 CD using the boot device selector built into the hardware. Same black screen preceded by a message that the boot device I had selected was not present. Same thing with the Fubuntu DVD that had worked just the day before. With the exception of the Ultimate Boot CD for Windows, I couldn't seem to get a live CD to boot. Now having finished downloading Rescatex and suspecting a problem with optical drive, I used UnetBootin to make a Rescatex bootable thumb drive. Rescatex has a pre-boot menu that lets you choose between 32 and 64-bit images, but that was as far as I got. Once I made a menu selection, nothing else happened. At this point, I was suspecting a hardware failure just happened to coincide with my last Ubuntu install. This is an ultra small form factor Dell, the kind you see in point-of-sale or hospital systems, so there weren't really many components I could swap out. I didn't have any DDR2 laying around, but I did test each of the two sticks the system came with independently and coming up with the same results as before. I then reasoned the Grub corruption error should go away entirely if I disabled the hard drive, so I physically disconnected the drive and disabled the SATA connector in the system BIOS. I still couldn't boot to a live CD or a bootable USB stick. Deciding there was a reason this machine had wound up on the secondary market, I hooked everything back up and reset the BIOS settings to the default. Still no luck. As a Hail Mary the next day, I burned the Rescatex ISO to a CD and hooked up an external USB optical drive. This time, I booted right into the live CD, did the two-step Grub repair, and when I unplugged the external drive, I was able to boot right back in to the Ubuntu install that I'd made the 2 days before. Now booting two live CDs from the original optical drive and from the thumb drive works. Rescatex for the win. And again, the link to their website's in the show notes. Now a little bit on how I got into this mess. Start story back to the beginning. As I said, the Dell shipped with 10.04, but I wanted something a little less pedestrian than the Ubuntu. Ironic that I wound up back there anyway. I tried Hybride, But once again, like the trial on Pentium 4 that I mentioned on Linux Basics, while Live CD booted, the icons never appeared on the desktop. I think it must be a memory thing, since that Dell only shipped with a gig of RAM, and that was shared with the integrated video. After Hybride, I really wanted to be one of the cool kids and run Solos OS. But the install hung twice, transferring the file boot / initrd.img-3.3.6-solosos. And I left that running one whole afternoon just to be sure. So failing the Solos OS, I cast it around for 64-bit ISO that I already had on hand. Because remember, it takes me about the better part of a day to download a DVD-sized ISO. And when I looked around, it occurred to me that I'd wanted to give Fedun 2 a try anyway. Fedun 2 is a rolling release fork of Fedora, with a GNOME 2 desktop, except that the bottom bar is replaced with a Mac-style dock replete with bouncy icons, which were really cute at first, but I could tell right away eventually that would get on my nerves. However, I found I liked the distro, despite the fact that I found the default software choices were a little light for a 900 meg download. At Google Office, Chromium, but no Firefox, no GIMP. Worst of all, no mumble, no repos at all. And really, Fedun 2 devs, when I first started to search Google for an easy way to install mumble on Fedun 2, you should see how many reviews I came up with that be summed up as, Fedun 2 is great, why is there no mumble? Unfortunately, thinking the mumble problem would be an easy solution, I put it on the back burner while I installed and configured all my default set of comfort apps from the repos, Firefox, XChat, GIMP, VLC, LibreOffice, etc. And I was also anticipating the arrival that week of a 2.4 GHz headset wireless, which I'd hoped to be able to use on the new machine to join that Friday in the Linux Basics log and podcast. I visited the Mumble installation page on SourceForge and found out they no longer link to .deb files or fedora.style.rpms, as they assume you can install these from your own repositories. Thinking someone must have found an easy solution, I hit Google. The best answer I found was a page on the Fedun 2 forums, again link in the show notes, that suggested downloading Mumble and a dozen prerequisite library.rpms from a third-party site called rpm.pbone.net. I visited pbone.net and found, when I looked up each library, it seemed I got a dozen different links to different versions of the file. Then I saw a link that seemed to offer the promise of simplifying my task. If I subscribed to pbone.net, I could add their entire catalog as a repo. While researching legitimacy of pbone.net, I found them mentioned in the same sentence as RPM Fusion as an alternate repository for Fedora. That gave me the idea to also install the RPM Fusion repos at the same time, thinking I might find some of the needed libraries in there. I registered with pbone and discovered I would only have access to their repository for a 14-day free trial, after which access would cost me $3 a month. And understandably, hosting such a service must cost some money. I figured the free trial would at least get Mumble installed and went through the setup. Among the questions I had to answer were which Fedora I was using. I picked 17 since Fedun 2 is rolling and should be cutting edge, I assumed, and 32 or 64-bit. Pbone.net generated a custom .repo file to place in my /etc/yum.repos.d directory. At this time, I'd already put in the repos for RPM Fusion. The fun started when I ran yum update. I got error cannot find a valid base URL for repo RPM Fusion-free. It turns out that the location of the RPM Fusion servers are usually commented out in the .repo files. I'm guessing Fedora must already know where they are, but Fedun 2 does not. So I uncommented each of the base URL statements, and there are three, in each of the rpmfusion.repo files. There are four of those files, free, non-free, free testing, and non-free testing. I then reran yum update, and this time I was told the paths for the RPM Fusion base URLs did not exist. I opened the path in a browser and confirmed it was indeed incorrect. I pruned subdirectories for the path one by one till I found a truncated URL that actually existed on the RPM Fusion FTP server. I looked at the .repo files again and figured out the paths referenced included global environment variables that were inconsistent between Fedora and Fedun 2. For instance, the variable $release in Fedora should return a value like 15, 16, or 17, where in Fedun 2 it resolves to 2012. I figured if I took the time, I could walk up and down the FTP server and come up with equivalent literal paths to put the RPM Fusion in the RPM Fusion.repo files. But instead, I just moved those repo files to another folder to deal with them another day. I again launched Yum Update. This time I had no errors, but I was getting excessive amount of new files for my new pbone.net repo. In Yum Update, both updates your sources and downloads all the changed files all in one operation. It's possible the ruling Fedora 2 is closer to Fedora 16, so when I told pbone.net I was running Fedora 17, all the files in that new alternate repo were newer than the ones I already had, which would explain why it seemed to be trying to replace every package on my system. In any case, I had no wish to be dependent on a repo I had to rent at $3 a month. So I canceled the operation, admitted defeat, and started downloading the 64-bit version of Ubuntu. I know I said I would rather have a more challenging distro, but because of its location, this computer needs to be it just works PC, not a hack on it for half a day box. I would like to have given Magia, Rosa, or PC Linux OS a shot, but too many packages from outside the repos, case in point Hulu Desktop, are only available in Debian and Fedora flavors. And you know the rest. I installed Ubuntu, fork my grub, and loop back to the top of the story to see how I solved that. Alright, well, you've been listening to Hacker Public Radio with 5150. You can contact me at 5150@linuxbasement.com or leave a comment on my webpage at thebigredswitch.drupalgardens.com. Thank you.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
And then, our party reached the mainland.